Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Robots and aliens stealing jobs, they're bringing drugs, they'll rape your mom. Beware the city's dazzling lights where dykes are waiting to steal your wife.
Mark Arm is a songwriter, musician, and the lead singer of the Seattle, Washington-based band Mudhoney. Since 1988, Mudhoney have been a vital and dynamic underground rock band with legions of fans around the world. Generations of musicians have followed their lead, and they continue to stand as an admirable influence for loud, uncompromising artistic expression. The band's latest album is called Digital Garbage. It's available via their longtime label, Sub Pop Records, and it prompted Mark to return to this show to talk about this excellent, rocking new album, protest music, the news media, social media, and anxiety, conspiracy theories, religious indoctrination, mass extinction, and many more topics, some of which are actually kind of cheery. With in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Planet of Sound locations in Toronto and Ottawa, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, and of course, listeners like you who make flexible monthly pledges at patreon.com/creativecontrol, and subscribe to this podcast and ask your friends to check it out and do the same. This is the 429th episode of Creative Control, featuring Mark Arm of Mudhoney, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
Muslims, Chinese playing militia in the tree. I stoked the fire in your paranoid car. I stoked the fire in your paranoid car. I feed on your fear.
Hi, Mark. How's it going?
Good, Vish. How are you?
I'm well. It's nice to speak with you again.
It's nice to talk to you as well.
Now, where in the world are you today?
I am at the Sub Pop Warehouse in Seattle, Washington.
How are things going in Seattle today?
They're fine. It's a sunny day.
Yeah, yeah. That's unusual for Seattle, I understand. It's often rainy. That's the stereotype anyway.
It's like Vancouver South.
Yes, right. So a bit of everything, but it doesn't, it's nice though. It's definitely, you don't get extreme cold, right?
No, no.
So that's nice. Now my understanding, I didn't get to attend because I had a family engagement, but did you take part in the whole Sub Pop Turns 30 extravaganza?
Well, we did, yeah. Yeah, we played out on Alki Beach. It was actually kind of at the end of a heat wave, and there was a little bit of rain to cool things down in early afternoon. It was a good day.
Nice. Now, I heard good things about the event. I'm curious, are you someone who gets into a reflective mode when a milestone like this is upon you? I mean, 30 years...
not usually.
No, I seem to recall the last time we spoke, I went down this road and you're like, no, nothing. I got nothing. I don't feel a thing.
Well, it's not that. I mean, you know, there's a sort of collective like, wow, that's weird. We've been around 30 years at like the whole band feels.
Yes.
But, you know, it's, I guess, creeping normalcy would be the term that describes our lives.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, what would have seemed outrageous to us at like in our early 20s when we started the band, for me in my mid 20s, you know, what would have seemed ridiculous then is absolutely normal now.
Well, speaking of normal, ridiculous, you know, maybe some kind of dichotomy there. Sub Pop had a day named in its honor, right?
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah. I wasn't there for that event.
But they also had an airplane outfitted, a Sub Pop airplane, which I've never, that seemed like beyond ridiculous almost. A plane that was outfitted for this record label. Is that correct? Did you get to go on the plane?
I did not. Okay. A couple other people did. I was working that day.
Okay.
And I know Tony, who's the head of A&R, was, and now he's a co-president of the label, was going to fly in that plane because initially the plane was going to fly to L.A. and he, you know, booked some meetings in L.A. and then it turns out the plane was changed the route to like Santa Ana.
Oh, I see.
And he didn't actually ride on the plane either.
Okay, I understand. So it just looked cool in the photos, I have to say. Like a Sub Pop had its own plane. It was like a Led Zeppelin thing almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it'd be nice if Sub Pop actually had the plane, but it's just it's a commercial jet on Alaska that just flies people who have no idea what Sub Pop is from place to place.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, well, beyond the reflective possibilities that could have been, I mean, I assume an occasion like that one might warrant reunions. People are traveling back to celebrate. Did you see anyone you hadn't seen in a while? Were you like, oh, wow, yeah, we were all in this together. I forgot. Oh, hey, you know, did you have that kind of stuff? Did you meet people?
There were a couple of people. I mean, yeah. There were people that I had seen somewhat recently, like Tom Mick from Feast was there. Mm-hmm. I used to work with him at Muzak, you know, well before all of this started.
Yeah.
And Feast was probably the great lost quote-unquote grunge band of Seattle in the mid-80s.
Oh, okay.
They never really released anything except maybe a song or two on a compilation. So it was good to see Tom. I didn't actually see the Fastbacks that day because I was doing other stuff at that time.
Yeah, sure.
But I figured Kim has moved back into town, so I'm sure I'll see them at some point.
Okay.
In a local venue.
Okay, cool. No, I just was curious, you know, historical kinds of questions. It's a historical occasion. I just wondered if you had those moments because I know they're special and they can be anyway. And I appreciate you even divulging any of that because I assume it, on some level, this is a personal milestone for you. The fact that the label has thrived for this long, I assume it's something. And you work there still. You work at Sub Pop in at least two capacities that I'm aware of. It must be special on some level.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's crazy. None of us thought there was a time in the 90s when it seemed like Sub Pop might not exist for very much longer.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, speaking of things not existing forever, digital garbage. I it's kind of a segue. It kind of works. I feel like we're all immersed in this digital garbage these days, and you've named a record digital garbage. I have to say, first of all, congrats on this record. It's wonderful. It's very forceful, and I would categorize it as an angry record. Would you agree with that sentiment?
I suppose it is.
Is it something you realized was angry as it was happening, or has it been brought to your attention that, oh my God, this is a very assertive record on some level?
Well, I think we understood what was going on with it as we were writing it.
Okay. All right. That's good. Sometimes, you know, you're so inside, you don't realize maybe how you're coming across, you know? I'm sure you've had that experience. Like, oh, really? I didn't think I was sad.
I didn't realize I was sarcastic as I am.
I assume you have a bit of a handle on it. So, I mean, I'd like to talk to you about these songs in some detail. But before we get to that, is there an overarching thing you'd want to say about this record and maybe what has inspired it? My sense is it's modern times. And
it's definitely a record of these times. It's not the record I wanted to make, but I feel like it was a record we had to make. That makes any sense.
Do you mean as both artists and potentially citizens of the country of the United States of America?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know that a lot of this kind of music is being made in an as overt a fashion as Mudhoney have conjured here. Do you agree? Like this, I know that people of our vintage often are like, there's not enough protest music. And I always feel like we sound kind of fuddy-duddy about it. But that's where I was coming from with that question. Would you agree that people aren't maybe speaking out as much as they probably could be?
I don't know. I'm not really paying attention to everyone else. I'm probably not nearly as aware as what's happening in pop culture and with like bands and musicians and stuff as you are.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of keep my head down and move forward and do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not the first person to have said that to me. So there's probably a bit of truth out there. And it astounds me that like people aren't talking about this shit.
Would you? I'm trying,
you know, in a musical context, like that artists aren't. I mean, I know for sure some are. They've got to be.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're not outraged at this point, I don't know what it's going to take.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I was thinking about the first song. I've thought a lot about these songs. I think I'd like to think I have. I've listened to them a lot, and I've kind of pondered what you're singing about and talking about and even the sound of it. And one of the first song on the record is called Nerve Attack. And I thought it was kind of an interesting, I viewed it as a double entendre. I kind of thought you were getting into the mental health and anxiety things we're suffering through because of the time. Is that where you were coming from with that particular song? I'm just curious.
Yeah. You know, it's obviously sort of, there's like a breakdown happening there, and just the idea of it kind of, you know, using like Nerve Attack as a thing that just sort of popped up on one of those Syrian nerve gas attacks.
Yeah.
but you know, I made it more of a personal thing. Like by the time I know my friend Tim in the UK heard it, that was just right around the time as like the former Russian agent and his daughter,
right? Yes,
suffered a nerve attack.
Yes,
so it's just kind of crazy.
To me,
that song is like an intro to the record. You know, it's like, this is kind of, you know, what's happening in my mind, and then like kind of go into specifics after that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you invoke Jumpin' Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones. You say, this ain't no gas, just to emphasize that it's a particular kind of nervous energy that is manifesting itself. Like I understand what you're saying about how if you're not angry now, if this isn't pissing you off, I don't know what will. Like, how are you personally dealing with this stuff? I assume not well, but do you want to elaborate upon that? I mean, it's clear by the record. Like, I can tell what's going on, but I'm just curious. Can you elaborate? Like,
well, I find myself to be just extremely focused on the news.
Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, I just can't get a goddamn break.
Do you feel like many people do, that the media is complicit in all this? Like we have CNN up here, and I've had a rough year myself personally, and then I would close out the night by watching these idiots yell at each other as a news thing. You know, it's supposed to be a panel, but it's just people screaming over each other, and then I'd go to bed with that in my head. And
right. And no, that's not good.
No, it's not. I mean, do you feel like it's obviously there's. Things need to be reported upon. Lots of terrible things are happening. Do you feel like the media is executing their role? And I'm obviously, and I don't mean to make you speak generally, but do you feel like certain media are doing a better job than others of actually reporting on this and dealing with this?
Well, the media that I pay attention to mostly is just like the Washington Post.
Right.
You know, I mean, they seem to be really on top of what's going on, and to a lesser extent, the New York Times.
That's exactly how I feel. I subscribe to both online, and I feel like I get more of a sense of what's actually happening from the Post.
Yeah. So I don't have cable TV anymore, so I'm kind of off of those shows.
Yeah.
I do watch shows like, you know, like John Oliver's show or The Daily Show.
Yeah.
You know, there's it's so overwhelming and terrible that it's nice to have it in a context that we can kind of laugh at the absurdity of it.
Yeah.
But then you also just kind of feel bad for laughing at the terribleness.
Well, I feel like in the glory days of the Daily Show, the news was life was life, and the satire was a nice balm.
And now
it feels like the real life has become the satire. Like everything's so cartoonishly strange. Like yeah. I don't get the same relief from the jokes as I used to get. That used to be a relief.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very strange thing, and I this leads into the next song is Paranoid Core, and one of the lyrics you've written here is, I stoke the fire in your paranoid core, I feed on your fear. Again, I feel like that's a media thing a little bit.
Yeah, and it's, you know, specifically like kind of conspiracy media.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, basically media that exists to sell people supplements.
Yeah, totally. Do you have any perspective on how distrust has now become weaponized? I just can't get over that. Like, it's gone to the point where no one believes anyone. It used to be fringes on the left and the right who'd be like, I'm not getting the whole truth. And now it's just this mainstream distrust. Like, everyone doesn't believe anything. We've been sort of, over the last 10 years, been told, rather taught, not to trust anything, any source. And I find that's very common. And your country and some of your citizens in particular seem to exemplify that. Do you have any perspective on how that happened, why that's happening?
I don't know. I mean, I think, like, maybe the politicization of the news by like outlets like Fox really, really started it, you know, in the 90s. It used to be, you know, when I was growing up, there was you would, for the most part, watch the news, the same news that everyone else watched. You watched, there were three major networks and then like public broadcasting, right?
Yeah.
And then the news was just sort of dispassionate. It didn't go super deep. You know, but like, this is what's happening, and people could agree on things.
Yeah, yeah.
But now people just sort of like watch whatever reinforces the opinion they already have, which I think is just bizarre.
Yeah, it's strange that information has become competitive. Like that's that's a weird aspect of it. It's like you're on a team. Like, I'm on the Fox News team.
It's like the truth is not liberal or conservative. It's the truth.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, I agree.
And there are things that everyone should agree on, like math, you know, it's just like, this is the way it is. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah. Like if a news outlet is reporting that, say, the president of the United States tells 8.5 lies a day, that should be indisputable. Anyone should be able to count that, but it doesn't. No, you're just making it up. Like that's a weird thing that is, because I feel like lying and
it all depends on what you're definition of lying is.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But
to Clinton.
Truth isn't always truth, right? That's the era we're living in.
Yeah. That's fucking insane.
It is. It's very maddening, and I know these things are on the record. I don't want to dissuade people from having a good time listening to digital garbage, but it's kind of there. And I know that one of the other things that you delve into is hypocrisy and religion, and that comes up quite a bit on Please Mr. Gunman, on 21st Century Pharisees, The Messiah's Lament. There's this sense that religion is also weaponized.
You know, that was a weird thing I kind of noticed after we put the record together. Like, in my mind, the record was more of a political record, and then, like, after a while, I was like, oh man, there's a lot of religious stuff on here. And I guess, you know, that's partially just like the way I grew up, kind of bubbling to the surface and exacerbated by this climate.
Hmm. Well, are you a particularly religious person, or is your family religious?
You know, I grew up going to a Lutheran church, you know, which is, like, you know, I guess it's not evangelical by any means, but then I went to was sent off to a Christian high school, and, you know, where I kind of in the 70s rubbed shoulders with evangelicals. But even then, like, things like abortion and whatnot weren't hot button issues for those people.
Yeah.
It was that just sort of came up, seemed like, in the 80s.
Yeah. I feel like this theme of entrenchment that I kind of alluded to earlier, like this notion of, like, this is what I believe and nothing's going to change my mind. I mean, that does seem to. When we talk about the media, and you were talking about different camps, now we're talking about religion, which is, I think, by design, you know, different teams. My team's better than your team. Your team isn't very good. I feel like you're getting into that kind of, why are we so segregated? Why have we become so separated from each other? Is that something that was on your mind, this notion that we're not galvanized as a people around anything anymore?
Well, I mean, I don't expect everyone to be all like kumbaya and get along famously and, you know, all think the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there should be some conflict. That's what makes things move forward. You know, if there wasn't, you know, slavery would still be in effect.
Yeah, sure, sure. But I mean, I feel like some of the conflict now is conjured. It's invented.
Oh, sure. And that's, I mean, I guess in a sense that harkens back to conspiracies or people looking to, you know, like basically claiming that, you know, the religious book they read is the truth. You know,
yeah,
there's a lot to it. I can't even like wrap my head around everything.
Yeah. Well, I would argue.
But I mean, I remember like in high school in the 70s, like a friend of mine, she would bring in this newspaper called the Washington Spectator.
Yeah. Yep.
Or Spotlight, one of the two. And it was a total like right wing conspiracy newspaper that like basically said like the Rothschilds and the Jews run the world, mm-hmm. and you know, had all this stuff about the Illuminati and the Freemasons and all, and it was just like, well, this is a bunch of hooey. You know, that's what,
yeah,
you know, this is just insane. And I saw through that shit like as a junior in high school, you know, like the idea that there are full grown adults who buy into crap like this, and it's gotten, you know, bigger and more popular, you know, these weird ideas that like the murder at Sandy Hook didn't, yeah. all the crap, the Sandy yeah. Hook crap didn't happen. And that like the children and the parents are crisis actors and all that kind of crap. It's like that, you know, for something to be that, you know, like how do you get all these people to just like play along and not have the truth spill out?
Yeah.
It's insane. It's kind of like the whole 9/11 was an inside job thing. If Dick Cheney was truly behind it, you know, I mean, I don't think he was a great man. He was like a very evil person who used an event. He didn't fucking create the event.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, he utilized the event.
You know, how many people, how many hundreds of people would have had to like been in on that?
Right. And again, I think this is what we're seeing. Like it used to be like, do you have a take on trolling? I feel like trolling used to be like a thing that even in its earliest stages as someone who aligns himself, I guess, with the punk aspects of life, I'd be like, ha ha ha. You know, and still, when the right person is being trolled, I'm like, if Alex Jones is getting trolled, I'm kind of into it, you know? But
right.
That seems to, like I said earlier, this...
But he's like a troll.
He is a troll. He's a genuine, real-life troll, and that's what he has done. It seems to me that 10, 15 years ago, a guy like that would say, Sandy Hook never happened, and he would be dismissed. Like, we wouldn't be talking about him. He wouldn't be given the platforms. But now, because they make the news, and the news is run based on clicks and likes and, you know, that kind of viral, whatever you want to call it, I feel like they do give Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller and Alex Jones the platforms because they know they're going to get attention. And I mean, I feel like you're dealing with social media and pseudo celebrity and all these things on the song Kill Yourself Live. Do it for the likes. Like, I feel like that's on your mind a little bit. Like, what are we doing? What are we talking about? Who are we talking about? There's nothing there. It's all very vapid.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So I don't know. This is just the world we have now, Mark. It's very confusing to me.
it's confusing to you.
you said that you grew up and you know, you knew in junior high that something was hooey, and I know you as a Seattle guy. Where did you actually grow up? Did you grow up there?
I grew up in Kirkland, which is like a suburb of Seattle.
Okay.
My family moved there when I was four.
And did you feel like you had a good, reasonable childhood on some level?
It was reasonable, I guess.
You were happy? You had a good time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I always felt like something was kind of missing, like the suburban lifestyle just sort of seemed somewhat empty. And I think I probably took things for granted for my parents who, like, basically my dad grew up in Kansas and that are.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Depression, and my mom grew up in Germany in the 30s. So,
oh my God! Wow.
So, I think my dad just must have thought I was like out of my mind. Like, why? What are you complaining about? You have everything, cool. And I'm just like, it's boring here.
Yeah, I one of the reasons I ask these questions is just to try to figure out where you're, you know, you alluded to the fact that you might be a bit sarcastic. I think we've come upon the fact that you might be a little bit cynical. I guess I just wonder, I have a sense of where some of that stuff stems from within myself, I think.
Right.
I'm just curious if you have a sense of when you thought, man, this, you say things were boring, but when did you start to feel like, you know, we were talking about distressed earlier, and I think part of punk stuff for me anyway was not trusting what I read and heard on its face. I want to investigate and make my own mind up. Do you remember where? And I feel like
sure.
I think you have a similar impulse within you. Like, where do you have a sense of where that comes from?
Well, I think that actually goes back to the church.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean, I remember like being in like Sunday school and actually just, you know, when something just didn't make sense to me, just like asking a lot of questions about it and, you know, just getting like kind of like, but this is what it says in the Bible kind of answers. It's like, well, that, you know, how can that possibly be? You know, that kind of, so I think I've kind of had that sort of worldview where like, I don't necessarily trust it or, you know, buy everything hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah,
for a long time.
Well, there's a part of me that feels like,
maybe, and you know, and that was like the great thing of like discovering punk rock, like especially like hardcore, American hardcore. It was like, it seemed like there was just like a whole bunch of people out there who just seemed kind of smarter than the average like jock or whatever. You know, a lot of them were fucked up kids, but they were like, a lot of them were really smart.
Do you feel like that kind of experience could lead someone to believe in certain conspiracy theories?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I know some people who like now, apparently on social media, are the kind of people who just like yell at other people and call them social justice warriors. It would.
You know, I bring this up because I feel like conspiracy theories are now tainted. I used to think like, yeah, the JFK assassination, that's a conspiracy theory. I would get all into it. And maybe it's Cracker Jacks or maybe it's not. I don't know. But there used to be kind of a vicarious thrill in not trusting everything. That's just how I came up. I just liked reading about that stuff. And now it seems like, again, following on what we've already discussed, it just feels like everything has the potential to have its own conspiracy theory and there's no end. It's, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess there's a certain appeal to that, you know, kind of before conspiracy theories were like totally politicized. You had people like Art Bell talking about UFOs and Hollow Earth and, you know, chupacabras and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, there are people, you know, I know people who are convinced that Elvis is still alive.
Yeah.
You know, and on what grounds, I have no fucking idea, except maybe they smoke a lot of pot. I just
Well, Well, it seems to me that conspiracy theories were potentially at some point once the domain of intelligent people. And I feel when I say they're tainted, I now feel like they're the domain of potentially idiots. I don't know how that happened.
Well, you know, there's that.
I mean, the Elvis one was always kind of silly, and that's been with me my whole. I was born in 77. So I was born the year he died, and I swear.
So they say.
And I that feel like that conspiracy has never, I feel like it's finally dying down a little bit. Like I don't hear it as much, but just forever, that used to be a thing, you know, once or twice a year, someone, the National Enquirer, someone, it would just recirculate, you know, that Elvis. Was
well, born. I mean, there was always, magazines like the National Enquirer and the Weekly World News and whatnot, those like weird tabloids.
Yeah.
It's just like Bat Boy.
Yeah. 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 Like, yeah. That's different.
Who buys that shit seriously? You know, like, I mean, you'd buy it on occasion just for a laugh, but.
Yeah. I feel like things used to be a bit more benign and now everything seems more serious and heated and, like you say, politicized. Like, it's more complicated.
Like weaponized.
Weaponized, as I said earlier.
And I think. there are other governments who, you know, who are really good at exploiting the American psyche.
Yeah, exactly. They're more objective.
Yeah. I mean, they've been watching us and, you know, observing us for decades, for generations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm up here too. I'm not an American. I'm Canadian. So I've been.
Yeah, but you're North American, and we speak the same language.
Yeah, it's true.
You just are much more polite than we are.
In theory, that is true. Yeah.
I don't know if that's even really true, but that's the I guess the joke, right?
That's the joke. Yeah, that's the joke on us. Well, I mean, as I think about the end of this record. The two songs that close it out, and by the way, I'm not bypassing anything else because it's not up to snuff or anything. There's lots. I mean, there's so many topics on this record, and there's so many places we can go. And I think there's a few things that you've expressed on an emotional level that, you know, I'm asking you, what does it mean? And I know that you don't know. Honestly, like I hope you appreciate that. I appreciate you don't have the answers when I ask you these questions.
Right.
But when you're talking about economic disparity and people getting rich and the World Economic Forum and things like that, I mean, it's all here. But by the end of the record, there's this resignation. The songs are Next Mass Extinction, which basically you say nothing will replace us in the next mass extinction, like we're doomed. And then in Oh Yeah, which closes out the record, it's just escapism. This notion of like, I'm going to go skateboarding, I'm going to go surfing, I'm going to go ride my bike, I don't care. So
well, that's like one way to deal with this shit. And, you know, none of our lives are like pure escapism, but, you know, we do like to have fun.
I agree. And I feel like
you can't just like wind yourself up with this shit like all the time. You mm-hmm. know, you'd just be a nervous wreck.
Well, to me, it's a nice release valve by the end of a record where you've engaged with a myriad of really intense topics. And then there is this sense at the end of every day for me as well, like, well, you know, like we're all going to die. nothing lasts forever. There's a sign of an impermanence. That doesn't mean you can't be engaged with what's happening. I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I hope
when we
talk about escapism, you would agree, I think, just based on your engagement on this record, we should all be very engaged in what's happening now.
We should. And Next Mass Extinction, you know, it's about, there's, in the geological history of the world, there have been five.
Right.
And these are things that like take place over, you know, a long period of time. And like some of them were just like flora just dying off, you know, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And there are scientists who think that we have entered the sixth mass extinction.
Yeah.
You know, like the way like animals are disappearing, and this isn't going to be like a quick event. But they think we're like about 100 years into like a 1,000-year event.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that the creatures, the main creature, well, one of the creatures that's like going to be extinct has brought it on themselves.
Yeah. And I feel like we're inundated with, if you're paying attention to the news and you're listening to scientists, you're inundated with this information and it oscillates between we have to do something now to it's too late. Do you think, again, Mark, I don't mean to ask you too difficult a question, but in this, I feel like all of this information has kind of led to this sort of nihilistic state we're in.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, that song was also just a jab at those neo-Nazis marching at Charlottesville saying, like, Jews will not replace us.
Right. I see. Okay. Right. I see.
It's like, yeah, nothing's going to replace you.
Nothing's going to replace us. I mean, you say that, and it's a very effective and dark sentiment, obviously, but it's, I would say, I'm not a scientist, but it seems true, doesn't it?
I mean, you know, neither of us will be here for to see it all the way to the end.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to eat healthy. Maybe I'll make it. I don't know.
Yeah, you won't be here in 1,000 years.
I'm telling you, I'm eating lots of carrots. I'm doing my best. I'm working out. I'm running. I try to run now to deal with the stuff, you know, anxiety.
Maybe there'll be like some sort of like cyber land that we can live in. We plug our brains into and live a Tron life.
I already feel like I am living a Tron life with my phone and my computer, to be honest, like a cyborg. Well, I know we don't have much time left. In fact, I think we have to wrap this up relatively soon. And I appreciate your answering these questions. They're not easy. And I appreciate you going through the record with me. What's next?
I appreciate your interest in the record, Vish.
Oh, well, I appreciate you saying that, Mark. No, I think it's a wonderful record and it's really necessary. And honestly, you know, as you said earlier, I listen to lots of music and I find people are dealing with stuff artistically with some nuance. And that's great. And I think you are as well. But I also, obviously, I think there's a lot more stuff on the surface here on this record than a lot of people are putting forward. And to be honest, we need it, I think.
And I think most importantly, though, beyond the lyrics, the music, I think, is pretty, you know, if I do say so myself, pretty dang good.
It kicks ass. It's a kick-ass record as well. Like, we've talked about some dark stuff.
It rocks.
It does. It rocks. Yeah. Front to back, and there's some nice, when I think of Night and Fog, or there's some dynamic stuff going on. It's a great record, I mean, all around. So I hope I put that across to you and to the people who are hearing us. What's next for Mudhoney? I'm calling you from Canada, so I don't know if you've got any Canadian shows or anything, but do you have plans? And I mean, I should ask, just because this seems like quite an outpouring of lyrics and ideas, I just wonder if this session or these sessions yielded stuff we haven't heard that didn't make the record. So yeah, sort of just what's next. Do you have plans that you can talk about in terms of Mudhoney?
Yeah, we're playing Vancouver on the 15th of September.
Okay.
And then at the end of the month, when the record gets a release, we play Seattle and Portland with the Scientists.
Okay.
From Australia, who are like one of the bands that really influenced us when we started and, you know, I guess continued to this day.
Nice.
So it's exciting to play with them. And then we play with Piss Jeans in Brooklyn in October. And then we go on tour for 3 weeks in Europe. And next year, the first part of the year, we'll be just doing like weekend fly-in dates. Until like a guy can accrue enough vacation for us to do another 3 week tour later on in 2019.
Right. As I recall from our last conversation, Guy's a doctor?
He's a nurse.
A nurse. Sorry. He's a nurse. Right? Yeah. Full-time nurse. That's right. Sorry.
Yeah.
And
that we do have like there's 7 songs that didn't make the record.
Ah.
None of them are songs that we dislike. So we think they're like worthy of release and they'll get released one way or another at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like to make a strong record as possible, we just should have like, we decided to just edit things and keep it kind of a short record instead of like, you know, making a really long, boring CD.
Did one of those songs happen to be the one that made it onto the commemorative anniversary 7-inch that I believe you have a split 7-inch with Hot Snakes, which are one of my favorite bands?
Yes.
So
yeah.
one of the songs from that session is on that?
Yeah.
What song is it? I don't have... I believe I may be getting this single, but I don't have it yet. But anyway, that notwithstanding, what's the song?
It's called One Bad Actor.
Oh, that sounds intriguing. What do you want to talk about? I know I haven't heard it. Maybe if you... Can people hear these songs? I know it was like a deal where if you went to the festival, you got these singles, but are they like going to be digital or are going
to
be?
Well, you had to buy them.
You just had to buy it on site, right?
Yeah.
What inspired that song?
More of this crap.
Okay, that's fair. I just was curious.
But it's kind of a heavier number. So it seems like it could have, on the record, it could have like either been in the same place as Next Mass Extinction.
Oh, okay.
You know, but it just like, I think the lyrical content of Next Mass Extinction was a little bit stronger.
I see. Okay.
Okay. But it's a heavy groove tune with like synthesizer.
Oh, synthesizer. Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I hope to hear it myself soon. I hope other people get to hear it. If they come across the single, maybe it'll show up somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine it'll show up in streaming services.
I don't know what the plan is myself. So I'm
anxious. I mean, our plan, we're also like doing like a small pressing of a tour only single for our European tour. But the long range plan is for like all of these songs to get put out on like a 12-inch EP.
Oh, okay. Rad. Okay. Great. Great. That's awesome.
But I'm not sure when that will be, you know.
Sure. No, I understand it's an idea, but that sounds great. Well, and where can people go to learn the most they want to learn about Mudhoney these days? Websites, Twitter. I know you don't like Facebook, but do you?
I don't know.
Probably subpop.com is probably the best place to go.
We started up like a online store at mudhoney.org, and there's one also in Europe, mudhoneyonline.com. Okay. So, and you know, we have a buddy in Holland who does like a Facebook page for us that like Dan and Guy and Steve are active on.
Yeah, I can appreciate why you avoid the computers and the phones as much as you do.
Well, I don't avoid computers and phones. I use them. They're useful tools.
Yeah.
I personally have a really hard time just like, and it may be just kind of my punk rock background or whatever, but like being really self-promotional. I just have a hard time just, you know, like it would always just bug me when like a band would go like, hey, we've got stuff for sale in the back. You know? So it's just hard for me to go like, hey, everybody. You know, I figured like the people who want to know, they'll find out.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I believe it to be a courtesy that I offer my guests at the end of the show. Just where can people go? This has been a good conversation. Where can people go to learn more about you if they want to figure that, you know, if they don't know you or whatever? It's just a thing I do, but I appreciate, I got the same, I have to tell people about these episodes, and it makes me, I feel bad about it sometimes. I'm like, yeah, here's another one of the, I've made over 400 of these things. Here's another one. You know, like I'm in the same boat as you, I think.
Well, I mean, that can be entertaining if someone's really into like what you're talking about. So I don't have a problem with podcasts or anything. I listen to podcasts.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I appreciate you being on this one again. It means a lot to me. And I thought if possible, we could pick a song from Digital Garbage for people to hear. And if so, do you mind selecting one of them?
Yeah. Why don't you play 21st Century Pharisees?
Now, why did you choose that song per se? We didn't get into that song as much other than talking just about, I guess, religion and hypocrisy, which is a major other. There's just hypocrisy and lying and all. It's all become normalized. It makes me nuts. But anyway, sorry.
I think it's a cool song. It's got a great intro. It's a kind of a different song musically for us, and it's aggressive. And it's probably the angriest song on the record.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I agree with you. All right, this is Mudhoney, brand new song called 21st Century Pharisees. Mark, thank you so much again for being on the show and making time for me today. I really appreciate it, and best of luck with everything.
My pleasure, Vish. Thank you.
Evangel-
Special thanks again to Mark Arm of Mudhoney for appearing on this, the 429th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all iOS and Android platforms, and also on things like Spotify, YouTube, and Audioboom as well. If you can't find an episode that you've been looking for, or you heard about it, and you can't find it on any of those things, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. That's vishkana.com. It's spelled exactly the way it sounds. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at vishcreative, or follow me at vishkana. You can also listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at cfru.ca, or on an actual radio at 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, please consider visiting patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast running. I thank all of the people who do this. It's amazing that you think of me and consider making these flexible donations each month, and I really do appreciate it, and it seems to be growing. I've been asking people to consider doing this a little bit more lately, and it's really, really appreciated. So thank you once again. Thank you. I just want to say thanks again. patreon.com/creativecontrol. I'd like to thank the in-kind support I received for this show from the likes of Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, and Planet of Sound locations in Toronto and Ottawa for their help. I'd like to thank my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use the instrumental version of his song, The Rest Is Yet to Come, to end the show every week. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, I know I've thanked some of you already, but I'd like to thank all of you now. Thank you for listening to this show regularly and telling your friends about it and subscribing to the podcast and downloading episodes. That means a lot, and I'm just going to keep making them. There's more to come. I'm going to go now. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.